All right, let's jump right in with a scenario for you. It's 1981, and the nation is still reeling from the attempted assassination of President Reagan. Imagine a young clerk, just 19 years old, working a simple clerical job in a Texas constable's office, about to lose her job for uttering a single sentence.
It sounds like the setup for a law school exam hypothetical.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But this is a real case, Rankin v. McPherson, and it landed smack dab in the lap of the Supreme Court, raising some seriously complex questions about free speech for public employees. Questions that, believe it or not, are still relevant to legal practice today.
Absolutely. This case really digs into the tension between individual rights and the expectations we have in the workplace, especially when you're dealing with public employees and the weight their statements can carry.
So we've got Ardith McPherson, our 19-year-old clerk. It's important to note she's not a deputy, no law enforcement duties, just regular office work. What could she have possibly said to get herself fired?
Well, picture this. She's at work. Here's a radio report about the assassination attempt on President Reagan, and makes a remark to a coworker, a pretty shocking one. If they go for him again, I hope they get him.
Wow, okay. I can definitely understand why that raised some eyebrows, especially given the tense atmosphere at the time. But this was just a private conversation, right?
Yep, just a casual chat with a colleague, not like she was shouting it from the rooftops or anything. But unfortunately for McPherson, another coworker overheard the remark and decides to report it. Next thing you know, she's called into Constable Rankin's office and fired.
You gotta figure that sparked a pretty big legal fight.
Oh, you better believe it. This wasn't some open and shut case. It first went to the district court, where, surprisingly, it was dismissed. But then it went up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they reversed that decision. This legal tug of war, this back and forth, shows just how tricky it can be to balance free speech rights with the needs and concerns of the workplace, especially when you're dealing with controversial opinions. Eventually, the case made its way all the way to the Supreme Court.
And this is where things get really juicy, especially for legal minds like us. The Supreme Court had to decide if firing McPherson actually violated her First Amendment rights. So how did they even start to unravel this knot?
They turned to what's called the Connick-Pickering test. It's this two-pronged approach that the court uses specifically for cases involving public employees and their right to free speech. It basically lays out a framework for figuring out whether an employee's right to speak their mind outweighs the employer's need to maintain a functional and, you know, efficient workplace.
Okay, I'm all ears. Break this Connick-Pickering test down for us. What's the first hurdle?
The first question they ask is whether the employee's speech, what they actually said, was a matter of public concern. And this isn't just about any random office chatter. We're talking about issues that have genuine relevance to the public. Things like political debates, local controversies, or even discussions about how government policies affect us, you know, everyday folks. Think of it as stuff that would be newsworthy, something that would spark a real public discussion.
Okay, I'm following. So was McPherson's comment, even though it was obviously controversial, considered a matter of public concern?
Believe it or not, the Supreme Court ultimately said yes. They acknowledged that the statement was definitely offensive and inappropriate, but they also recognized that it touched on a topic of public concern. At the time, the president's policies and the very real possibility of further assassination attempts were at the forefront of everyone's minds. So her comment, even though it was made privately, was tied to a larger public conversation.
Wow, that's pretty surprising. So even a private conversation can become a matter of public concern.
That's the fascinating thing about this case. It really pushed the boundaries of what we consider protected speech. And that's what makes it so important even today. It established that even when a public employee speaks their mind privately, it can still be protected under the First Amendment, especially if what they're saying relates to broader issues that impact the public. It's not just about what you say on the clock, but also how your personal opinions might intersect with these big, important issues.
All right, so McPherson cleared that first hurdle, but the Connick-Pickering test has two parts, right? What was the next challenge she had to overcome?
Right. So passing that first test just means we move on to the second part of the Connick-Pickering test, which is where things get a little more practical, I guess you could say. This part really digs into the nitty-gritty of the workplace itself. Basically, the court had to weigh McPherson's free speech rights against her employer, you know, their interest in having a workplace that runs smoothly and efficiently.
Yeah, that sounds like a tough line to walk for sure. So in McPherson's case, did the court think her comment was disruptive enough to actually justify firing her? I mean, that's a pretty extreme measure.
That was the big question, wasn't it? The justices really had to look at all the different factors involved. I mean, they considered things like McPherson's position in the office, you know, the fact that she was just a clerk, not a high-ranking official. And they also took into account that she made the comment privately, not publicly, and there wasn't really any evidence that it actually caused any problems or interfered with the day-to-day work happening at the constable's office.
So it sounds like they weren't just laser-focused on what she said, but the whole context of the situation.
Exactly. They really emphasized that this wasn't a statement made in public. You know, it was a private conversation between co-workers, and there was no indication that it led to any real disruption or harm to the way the office functioned.
So it seems like things were starting to look up for McPherson at this point.
They definitely were. The Supreme Court ultimately ruled in her favor, finding that her First Amendment rights had been violated.
Wow. So even though her comment was offensive and controversial, the court still sided with her right to free speech. That's a pretty significant decision.
Oh, absolutely. The majority opinion, which Justice Marshall wrote, really hammered home the point that even though what McPherson said was inappropriate, it wasn't actually a call for violence or a threat to anyone at the constable's office. It was just her expressing her personal opinion, even if it was a misguided one, and firing her over that, well, they felt that went too far.
Did the court say anything specifically about the content of what she said, you know, the words themselves, or were they more focused on the circumstances surrounding it?
Justice Marshall actually addressed that directly in his opinion. He wrote, and I'm paraphrasing a little here, that whether a statement is appropriate or controversial shouldn't determine whether it's a matter of public concern. That's a really important point because it means that even opinions that are unpopular or might offend people can still be protected under the First Amendment.
That's a powerful idea. So they were basically saying we shouldn't just try to silence people because we don't like what they have to say or find their views distasteful.
Exactly. And here's where things get really interesting because not everyone on the court agreed with this decision. Justice Scalia, who was known for, let's say, having strong opinions, wrote a pretty fiery dissent.
Oh, I bet he did. What were Scalia's main points against the majority opinion?
Well, his argument was basically that what McPherson said was basically advocating for violence. And he felt that law enforcement agencies should have more freedom to maintain discipline and order within their ranks, you know, to ensure things run smoothly.
I can see where he's coming from with that, especially when you're talking about law enforcement and the sensitive nature of their work. Did Scalia say anything particularly memorable in his dissent?
Oh, yeah. He posed this really thought-provoking question, and it's one that I think is still super relevant today. He asked, would you want someone who expresses support for presidential assassins handling your paperwork?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a question that definitely makes you stop and think. I can understand how that would make people feel uneasy, especially when you're talking about a position of public trust. It adds another layer of complexity to this whole issue.
It does, doesn't it? And that's what makes this case so fascinating. It forces us to really confront those tough questions about where we draw the line between protecting free speech and making sure that our workplaces are safe and function properly.
So we've got this strong dissent from Scalia, but were there any other opinions on the court that took a different approach to this whole issue?
Actually, yeah, Justice Powell wrote what's called a concurring opinion. What that means is he agreed with the outcome that McPherson's firing was wrong, but he had a different perspective on how the court got there. He actually felt that McPherson's speech was so clearly protected that they didn't even need to use the whole Connick-Pickering test in this case.
Interesting. What made him think that the test wasn't necessary in this situation?
Powell's view was that private conversations between employees should pretty much never be a reason for someone to lose their job. He argued that employees need to be able to vent, you know, express their frustrations without worrying about getting fired for it. And employers, in his opinion, shouldn't be trying to police every single private conversation that happens at work.
Yeah, that makes sense. Trying to monitor every word said in the workplace would be practically impossible. And let's be honest, it would probably create a pretty stifling atmosphere. So we've got this landmark decision in Rankin v. McPherson that upholds the free speech rights of a public employee who said something really controversial. But why does this case from 1987 still matter so much today? How does it actually affect how we deal with these kinds of situations now, almost 40 years later?
Well, that's the thing about these landmark Supreme Court cases, right? They tend to have a ripple effect that lasts for years and really shapes how we think about these really fundamental issues. And Rankin v. McPherson is super relevant today because it set this precedent for protecting even offensive speech As long as it doesn't directly disrupt the workplace and, you know, touches on something that's considered a matter of public concern. And in our current social and political climate, that's a pretty big deal.
It does seem like these days you constantly hear about people facing backlash for things they say, whether it's online or even just a casual conversation. It makes you wonder how much this case from way back when has actually impacted how we approach those situations now.
I'd say it's had a huge impact. Rankin v. McPherson didn't just protect popular speech. I mean, it explicitly protected speech that some people find offensive. And that's a cornerstone of the First Amendment, right? It's easy to defend free speech when we agree with what's being said, but the real test is whether we're willing to stand up for the right of people to express views that we might find, you know, completely reprehensible.
So how has this case actually shaped the way we handle these controversies today? Can you give us some examples of how it plays out in the real world?
Absolutely. Think about all the recent controversies we've seen involving, say, teachers expressing controversial viewpoints on their personal social media accounts or government employees criticizing policies they disagree with. Rankin v. McPherson gives us a framework for how to analyze those situations and figure out where the line is.
So it's not just about what was said, but also who said it, where they said it,
yeah,
and what the impact of their speech actually was.
You got it. The court in Rankin understood that there's a big difference between, say, a public employee making an offhand comment during a private conversation and, let's say, a high-ranking government official making a public statement that could really damage public trust or throw a wrench into how the government operates.
So hypothetically, a police officer posting, I don't know, controversial memes on their personal Facebook page might be viewed differently than a school teacher doing the same thing.
It's possible. It would really depend on a lot of different factors, you know, their specific roles within their organizations, whether their posts could be seen as representing their employer in some way, and whether there's any evidence that their speech actually caused disruptions or problems at work.
It sounds like there's no easy answer, no one-size-fits-all rule for these situations.
You hit the nail on the head. It all comes down to carefully weighing those competing interests, you know, the employee's right to express themselves freely versus the employer's need to maintain a work environment that functions properly and is, you know, free from unnecessary disruptions. And that balancing act is something that courts are still struggling with today.
It really makes you think about all the different scenarios this could apply to. Nurses expressing political views online, firefighters criticizing their department's policies, even librarians sharing their personal beliefs on social media.
And that's exactly why Rankin v. McPherson is such a crucial case to understand. It gives us a kind of roadmap, though maybe not a perfect one, for navigating these situations where an employee's free speech rights might clash with their employer's expectations.
It also makes me wonder, though, has this focus on protecting even offensive speech gone too far? I mean, where do we draw the line?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's one that we as a society are still grappling with. We want to protect free speech and encourage open and honest dialogue, but at the same time, we also want to create workplaces where people feel safe and respected. So yeah, it's a constant balancing act.
Okay, so we've really dug into this case. We've looked at the historical context. We've talked about how it's still influencing how we think about free speech in the workplace today. What are the big takeaways here? What do we want our listeners to walk away with?
To me, the biggest takeaway is that Rankin v. McPherson serves as this powerful reminder that the First Amendment is meant to protect even the most unpopular and offensive speech. As long as it's not inciting violence or actually disrupting the workplace, it's about protecting that right to express ourselves, even when our opinions are controversial or might rub people the wrong way.
So in a nutshell, it's about safeguarding that fundamental right to express ourselves, even if what we're saying might ruffle some feathers.
Exactly. And it also reminds us that context is king. You know, the same words said in different environments by different people can have totally different consequences.
This case really drives home the point that we have to think critically about these free speech issues, especially in the context of the workplace. And there's rarely a clear-cut, easy answer.
Well said. I think this deep dive has given our listeners a lot to chew on. We've covered so much ground, from the specific details of the case to its broader implications for how we navigate free speech in today's world.
Yeah, we explored the different arguments, the dissenting opinions, the lasting impact of this decision. It's a good reminder that free speech is a complicated and constantly evolving area of law, and it's something we'll definitely continue to explore here on The Deep Dive.
I'm already looking forward to our next deep dive. You know, there's always more to learn, more to unpack, more to discuss.
Absolutely. So, listeners, keep those brains engaged. Keep those critical thinking skills sharp and stay tuned for more thought-provoking discussions on all things legal. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.